Hello and welcome to The Rundown, a podcast from Politics Home. I'm your host, Alan Tolhurst, and this week, in light of the renewed interest in the Post Office Horizon scandal, we're going to be discussing some other burning injustices and unresolved scandals that perhaps deserve their own primetime ITV drama. With me, I have Barry Gardiner, Labour MP and long-time campaigner for leaseholders, as well as Nazek Ramadan, Director of Migrant Voice, and Alice Hardy, a lawyer for Bindmans, who work on behalf of the TOEIC overseas students, falsely accused of cheating on the English language tests, as well as Blanche Zaff from the Loan Charge Action Group, who campaign on behalf of those pursued by HMRC over a tax arrangement. So Barry, firstly to you, can you just explain what the kind of leasehold scandal is and how you first got involved? I understand it's about 25 years now since you've been working on this. So you give us the kind of proceed version of what's been happening.
People think they own their own home. They don't. Mm. They own the right to live in it for a period of time. The trouble is that the person who really owns it has the right in law to charge you for all the things that may need to be done to that home. So if you need a new roof, if you need new windows, if it needs painted on the outside, you don't get to decide when that happens. They do. They decide when it happens. They decide if it needs to happen, whether you think it does or not. They decide who will do it. They decide how much it will cost. And they decide that you will pay for it. Ultimately, it is a con. Mm. And many people who live in leasehold apartments have no other option but to do that. And of course, it's got a lot worse since the Grenfell scandal.
Yeah.
Because we've now discovered so many fire safety defects in these old leasehold blocks, these high-rise blocks. And it's not all to do with cladding. It's to do with fire-stopping defects. It's to do with compartmentation that just wasn't done properly in the original building. So people are now trapped. They can't sell their home. They can't move out of their home because nobody will buy it. No mortgage company will lend on the property so that anyone can buy it because they believe, quite rightly, that it's unsafe. And I'm afraid that the government has introduced legislation in the Building Safety Act, which has not solved the problem. And they've now introduced further legislation, which is going through Parliament at the moment, called the Leasehold and Freehold Reform Act, which doesn't reform leasehold. I mean, it's 133 pages of tinkering about at the edges that does nothing to solve the fundamental problem. And what you need to do is you need to give those leaseholders the right to manage their own property, to have what is called common hold, whereby they own their own flat, but they own in common with everybody else in the building the common parts, and they have the right to manage it.
Yeah, and so we'll come on to the legislation in a bit, but how many people does this affect? And I suppose, how do people come to be affected by it? I suppose people bought their homes, not just apartments actually, but also houses as well, we now learn, were part of a leasehold rather than a freehold scheme. How did this kind of happen, really?
Yeah, and I'm really glad you raised the issue of houses, because when I started campaigning on leasehold, as you say, 25 years ago,
very young when you started.
Quite right, thank you. It was all about leasehold flats. What's happened since then is that developers have started building estates specifically to have leasehold houses. Now, there are no common parts except for the estate management. So, for example, there might be a little bit of landscaping. There might be a road that's not adopted by the council. And what happens is you get charged a service charge for maintaining that. Well, in many cases, for not maintaining that.
And you're not in charge of how much that is and how much that can go up year on year.
But much worse than that, there is what is called a ground rent. Now, the ground rent, everybody knows, it's a peppercorn ground rent. That's what we all think of as a ground rent. It's really a nominal nothingness. But what they started doing was they introduced ground rents, and they would introduce them at what appeared to be a bit high but manageable costs. So let's say it was £2,000. And what purchasers didn't notice and what solicitors didn't point out was that in the small print, actually the ground rent doubles, and it doubles every few years.
Wow.
Now, you know how quickly that can mount up. So 2 goes to 4, 4 goes to 8, 8 goes to 16,000, 16,000 goes to 32,000. £32,000 to live in your own home? This is wickedness. Mm. So it's developers have created a rentier structure simply to extract money from the people who are going to be living there. And what we found, and this was some of the evidence given to the Standing Committee in Parliament, was that many people who bought these homes did not know they were buying leasehold homes. They thought they were just buying a normal home. They never believed there was such a thing as a leasehold home. And they only found out once it was too late. Yeah. So this is another aspect which has really been introduced cynically by developers.
And since the legislation in 2002 was meant to solve leasehold stuff.
That's right.
Well, we'll come on to kind of how that might be resolved or potentially resolved through that legislation stuff in the future. But Nazek, talk us through who are the kind of the TOEIC students and how did this come to happen? What are we discussing here?
Well, we're talking about around 56,000 international students who came to the UK to study a few years back, of course, spending their parents' life savings. They came to the UK for the best education in the world, for the best students' experience in the world. They all had dreams and ambitions. They come from well-off families to be able to afford the, foreign student fees. And they were caught into the TOEIC scandal, we're calling it, where Panorama program in 2014 will show that there are some cheating taking place at a couple of centers where some students maybe paid money for someone else to do the test on their behalf. And as a result, the government decided anyone who took this particular test should be kicked out of university, out of the country. They're criminalized. They can't study anymore. And the evidence against them at that time were not there. And they were not allowed to challenge this accusation against them, even though this accusation means to them, this is the end of their future as they know it. They can't go to another university to study because of this allegation. They can't find a job because of this allegation. They can't travel to another country. And many of them also, they were disowned. Some of them were disowned by their families. Their families said,
they were cheating,
you brought shame on the family. You cheated us. You wasted our life saving and you brought shame on us. And if you're telling us you're innocent, you must prove yourself innocent in UK court. So it's impacted a large number of students who were trapped, didn't know what to do. Well, up to 7,000 were either deported or left under pressure to leave the UK. Many, more than 2,000 were detained. But some of the students, a few thousand, stayed here to clear the names because they knew once they leave the country, this is it, this is the end to them. So we've been working with those students.
Wow, so we'll talk a lot about the kind of the similarities, I suppose, with some of the post office stuff. It's a classic example with the post office. A lot of people, some postmasters, they were not believed. People believed that the software said they'd stolen this money, and despite their protestations, they must have done. And in this situation, I think the company's Educational Testing Service, who re-investigated all, and they found that 97% of the English tests were suspicious. But I mean, and then people believed that and continued to believe that, despite the fact that, evidence has shown that that's not the case, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because we've spoken to people who used to run centres and said no cheating took place at our centre. There was probably around just over 100 centres in UK. And some of the students said, but when we did the testing, there were cameras around. The Home Office were actually checking the centre on that day and they saw me. I was sitting the test and people were told, you did the test in Leeds. Well, they said, but we've never been to Leeds.
Right.
I did it in London. Or they were told, you go back to India and I'm from Pakistan. I mean, the amount of wrong information, and those students didn't know what to do, didn't know where to go. So they went, some of them, to their MPs, their MPs being supportive and sympathetic, but they're struggling because they're struggling in court because the evidence against them is not there. And then, when after a few years, managed to get ETS to share with them some of the voice recording, because a lot of it is around this voice oral test, whatever.
Yeah.
They were presented by someone else's voice. And they said, but this is not my voice. And this Home Office and the court said, oh, exactly, because you cheated, someone else did it on your behalf. No, it's not me. And it's really impossible for the student
to prove that it wasn't, prove,
I didn't cheat, but I'd not. And you know, can you believe that 56,000 students, all of them have cheated? We're talking about students who actually their education back home did in English. We're talking about students who are doing their masters, who already passed a degree in UK, and some of them passed their masters in UK and they're doing PhD.
So why would you cheat? Why would you cheat?
Students who speak fluent English, and some of them are. I mean, one of the students said, you know what? I'm very good. I don't trust anyone to do the test better than me. The sad thing is this is a very basic, simple test.
Yeah.
And the other sad thing, that students don't need to do this test because they already did it in their country. They passed when they applied to universities. They proved that they could speak English. They have everything they need. But here the government asks them, require them every 2 years when they renew their visa, they need to go back to do that same test, as if their English is going to deteriorate while studying at UK university. I mean, come on, they don't need to do it anyway to have it.
Yeah,
but, you know, gorgeous. This is, I mean, they were trapped. I think most of the students we worked with, they're suffering from mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, they struggled for years and years, and some of them are on medication to stop them killing themselves.
Alice, obviously you work for Bynum's, which together with Nezek's organisation, Migrant Voice, has the TOEIC Justice Project. Just speak about what sort of legal remedy you guys have been trying to have for some of these students.
Well, for the first nearly 10 years, the legal remedy was fighting the allegation. The way that these students came to learn about the allegation was really insidious. Most of the time, the Home Office had not informed them that there was this allegation. So when they came to renew their visas, they would discover years later, by which time they couldn't really fight it nearly as effectively had they known at the time. And none of them had an in-country right of appeal. So some were deported, some had no option but to leave and tried to fight it from abroad. Others stayed here and fought it here. And the immigration team at Bynum's fought on their behalves for many years, not all of them by any means. We now have a group of some 23 or so of those people who were eventually exonerated after many, many years of fighting. And they have issued claims against the Home Office for the way that they've suffered. Some of them were detained, some of them more than once, some of them for a period of months, not short periods of time at all. Many of them lost earnings and earning potential. They weren't able to finish their degrees, for example. So the jobs that they're now in are quite different to the jobs that they were working towards and had worked towards for many years. So we have a group action on behalf of 20 or 23 or so. We're fighting that still, although coming across some obstacles along the way.
Well, I was going to say, what's the Home Office's view on this? Do they still believe ETS that 97% were cheating? I know that a few thousand have been exonerated. So what's their kind of position on the whole scandal as it is now?
I wouldn't say that they have accepted where our clients have got to in terms of being exonerated. There have been two cases that have settled, only one with our firm. I'm aware of one elsewhere. And it appears that the direction is that we will be able to settle those cases, but every single one is being fought in every respect. So it's not a streamlined process by any means.
Mm. Blanche, then on to you, the loan charge. Just explain to us what that is and who that kind of who this kind of encapsulated and who your action group is campaigning on behalf of.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it's probably the most heinous scandal I've ever come across. HMRC...
In a crowded field, as we can tell at the moment, yeah.
Yes. HMRC brought out a new law a few years ago, and it's against contractors and outsourced workers who never knew that they owed any money whatsoever because they were submitting their annual returns every year through their tax advisors or umbrella companies. And HMRC are claiming tax that goes back certainly as far as 10 years if people worked 10 years before. And not only that, they're also assessing interest on the amount that people didn't know that was due, backdated, so that whilst they would like to have this behind them, they find that the interest due on the money that they didn't know that they owed is probably 25% or 50% added on to that amount.
Wow.
Now, originally, HMRC said it affected maybe 10,000 people. They didn't do a proper impact assessment. They then admitted it might affect 50,000, and the recent figure is 67. But that includes partners, families, friends, and common on this table, people through behavioural insight written letters from HMRC feel guilty, they've acted illegally, they're ashamed, they won't share, and nobody will come on any programmes or media whatsoever because it's reliving a trauma that's been put on them.
Yeah, so HMRC came down pretty hard. They suggested that it was disguised remuneration, that people were wrongly being put forward as contractors or sole traders when they were actually employees. How did this happen? Because as I understand it, a lot of people were told by their employers or by recruitment agencies this was how they needed to set up, and yet they're then being caught by this years later, right?
There's something called IR35 for contractors. We need contractors, contractors and outsourced workers. And it's very difficult to be compliant with that, as we've seen in the media recently with very high-profile personalities. So people have gone to their accountants, long-standing family accountants, big shiny companies, umbrella companies, who promise an umbrella, one size fits all. So it takes care of their indemnity insurance, public liability insurance, VAT if they're VATable. And HMRC have accepted these returns every single year. So if they've accepted them without open years, one assumes they're on the correct side of IR35 by virtue of HMRC accepting them for many years, consecutive years, that is so. So I feel that HMRC, although they didn't like the operation of the umbrella companies, didn't stop them. They failed to stop them. They failed to take income from the umbrella companies and instead are going for the low fruit.
Yeah. But Barry, actually, I see you're a member of the Loan Charge APPG, so something you've been involved in as well. What have you kind of made of it? I know there's a few hundred MPs now have got involved with it.
Yeah, I remember when the sort of whole IR35 broke and constituents came to me who got into problems with it. You know, I am not in favour of anybody evading their taxation. And it seems to many of the companies that insisted the people who were working for them went on to this contractual basis actually were doing just that.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is why the government is pursuing the individuals and not the companies. Why it's pursuing the individuals and not the advisors who actually said that this was the way in which they should order their affairs. And I think it's also open, obviously, to those individuals to proceed against the advisors who gave them the advice that this was perfectly lawful and who have professional indemnity insurance that should be able to cover it. So, I mean, in effect, the common theme of all of these, and I had constituents who came to me with the TOEIC scandal as well. I remember a group of young students coming. One woman told me that, just as you said, that not only had her father and her mother given her money to come, but they'd actually borrowed from relatives so that she could come and study here. I said, well, look, you must obviously inform your father straight away. And she said, I can't. And she just broke down. She said, I can't possibly go back to him. You don't understand what this means. Mm. But the common thread here is people were totally unaware of their situation. It doesn't matter whether it was, you know, with IR35, whether it was these students, or whether it was a leaseholder buying a leasehold house. People didn't know what they were liable for.
Yeah. And
this is what's so horrifying about it. And then they find themselves in debt, in all of these cases, or with their lives desperately impoverished as a result. And there are some things that government can do. You know, yeah, it can legislate on the leasehold thing. It can act with TOEIC. HMRC should get its act together and pursue the real crooks in this situation.
I was just going to say that since 2019, I've watched from the public gallery and on TV MPs representing loan charge victims, and they've been incredibly supportive over the years to deaf ears. And recently on the APPG, we've got our 266th parliamentarian supporting loan charge victims, which is unbelievable. Of those, 104 are Conservative. You'll be pleased to know 82 are Labour. And it's across all parties. And the devastation is phenomenal. And every day, you know, we're talking about students here losing their lives. We've got pensioners who've lost their lives because they're going to lose everything.
Yeah.
Selling their homes, remortgaging. Every day I hear a tale that brings tears to my eyes, which is why I'm very happy to represent them.
Yeah, well, there was a big push a few years ago, and the government did look at it again. There was the Morse review into it, and that didn't really resolve a lot of these issues. And talk about what's been happening more recently. There's more people have been caught up, as you say, that number has kept increasing of those involved with the loan charge.
We originally asked HMRC for a review. The first one, they reviewed themselves. The second one was the Morse review. I attended two of the meetings for that. The issue there was Lord Morse was severely restricted in what he could do, and it was not independent of HMRC, proven through freedom of information, and has been interpreted by HMRC in the way that they would like to interpret it. So pre-2010 was unclear, and the loan charge should only apply from 2010. But that's not been the case. They've gone backwards, they've gone forwards. So many MPs fighting on our behalf. So we're not really any further forward, other than recently Rachel Reeves has promised a truly independent review in alignment with 28 cross-party MPs in the last loan charge debate. There were no challenges, there was no contradiction. They put forward the cases for their constituents, and it was agreed that HMRC have to do the right thing. There has to be an independent review, and there shouldn't be any law that is retrospective.
Yeah, in that way. Well, it's interesting, you talk about the MPs being involved and pushing for it. Obviously, there's been some MPs in with the TOEIC scandal, people like Stephen Timms, the Labour MP, has been pushing this for a long time. Martin Day, the SNP MP. It kind of shows, I suppose, that the MPs, the work they can do. But I guess ultimately, unless government is willing to not just pass legislation, but actually allow the things to be sped up and do the court case, actually things move very slowly, and it's not in the interest of those involved to allow it to move any quicker, right?
I mean, yes, yeah. For the students as well, the fact that you have 3,500 students actually won their cases in court, proving that they did not cheat. I mean, surely must tell you something. Mm. And we're talking here about very lengthy, complicated, expensive legal processes. So we're working with hundreds of students, and some of them, they pay on average between 15 and £120,000 in legal fees. And, you know, their lives, the future is on hold for over 10 years. I mean, you know, the impact, again, we talk about the impact not just on the students, on their families. I mean, one of the students didn't tell his father, who is a head teacher back home, for many years. When he told him, his father had a heart attack.
Yeah.
His father could not cope with that news. We have a mother who actually came to do just a master's in 1 year. She hasn't seen her children. She had two children left back home. She hasn't seen them for 10 years because those people cannot go back as a cheat to back to the countries. We have students who missed family weddings, family funerals. I mean, you know, the impact is beyond the students. And here you could see, even with all those cases, every time you feel, oh, there is hope and we're winning cases, maybe the Home Office of Government will budge and will assist the students, because clearly not all of them cheated, and clearly you can't accuse someone of committing a crime or something without giving the opportunity to defend themselves, without giving the evidence against them. I mean, this is basic law, isn't it? Mm. But this did not happen in the case of students. And we still have lots of barriers, and we still see the Home Office coming to court and fighting any court cases. Students are still refused for various reasons. For various reasons. I mean, some of the courts are against the students, and they're refused for silly reasons. I think we don't know where to go. I mean, this is why when we watch the post office scandal and
Mr. Bates, drama.
I mean, we decide, you know what, I think, because there are a lot of similarities.
Yeah,
it's all about IT systems, even gone wrong or manipulated or whatever, and you've got people's lives being destroyed. And it's, we saw the similarities and we were very impressed by the impact it had. And we felt, you know, if this is what it takes, if it takes drama, then the drama it is. Let's work on it. And this is what we're doing at the moment.
Yeah.
So now we're doing training with the students on writing for drama scripts and writing books. And we're contacting lots of production companies to pitch this. So if any production companies listening, please do get in touch. This is what we're trying to do, because we're so desperate. We're a charity. We don't do drama.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, there's no way out. We want anything, any way to give those students the justice they deserve, because this should not be happening.
Mm.
Not now, not in the UK.
Yeah. Alice, obviously, with the wheels of justice move pretty slowly in these kind of cases. And also, it's very expensive to, as an individual who's, like, say, already spent their life savings to come over here and study, to then take on the might of the government and the Home Office. You know, is kind of a common theme, both with the Post Office and other scandals. It's very difficult to take on the government, take on the establishment, when they don't want to accept necessarily that there's been wrongdoing, I suppose.
Yes, the obstacles are immense. And the obstacles that they had to overcome to get to the point where they were exonerated were immense. Hence, you know, the field starting with some 50,000 students has now reduced to 23 in our case. That's 23 who've been exonerated. I'm sure there are others, but it's, you know, it's a clear sign of how difficult it is to get to the point where the battle is won and you're claiming compensation. It's the obstacles are immense. And as I mentioned before, the fact that they were accused of cheating and their immigration status was removed, and they were given no in-country right of appeal, just meant that the odds were stacked against them. And as Nazeen said, that it's not like in a criminal case where you have to provide the evidence that proves beyond all reasonable doubt that somebody has done what it is that's alleged against them. In this case, essentially, the burden is reversed. These students are finding themselves having to prove that they didn't cheat, in circumstances where they're saying, well, that voice isn't mine. What have you got to link that voice to my test? Why is it that you say that that voice that isn't mine
is mine?
Is mine? And they've been, you know, just banging their heads against a brick wall, getting nowhere with that. So it's a kind of Alice in Wonderland world they find themselves in.
Talking about TV dramas, I know, Barry, you've been involved in a documentary about the leasehold scandal. Just explain about the documentary and what you kind of hope to achieve with it. As you say, it's been a very long-running problem that's perhaps been getting worse over the past 20 years. Yeah. What do you kind of hope to achieve with the documentary?
Well, it's precisely what Nazeem was saying. It's about getting awareness. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that, you know, MPs beaver away there for years. I mean, and then we find that actors come along and suddenly it's, you know, it's, but fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How fantastic. So I simply thought, well, you know, if it takes a TV drama or documentary to expose this, then maybe that's the business I should sort of sideline in. So I created this documentary. In fact, I'd done it with on the issue of fire and rehire before,
yeah, I remember,
which
yeah.
was a private member's bill I was taking through Parliament. And that was really successful in raising the issue. And what I did with that is I'd go around the country, different groups would invite me to come and speak. There'd be a showing of the documentary for half an hour, and then we'd have a question and answer and a discussion. And it really raised the profile. And so that's what I've done with the leasehold documentary. But what I wanted to pick up on was, I think it's so interesting what you were saying about, in law, you normally think, well, the burden of proof is on them to show that you are guilty. But what the TOEIC students have experienced is exactly the same as what the lone R35 people have experienced, because HMRC have simply said, you owe this much. And they can't appeal it. They're not allowed to appeal it in court. And I think that's one of the great scandals here. Normally, if somebody says, you owe this, and you say, no, I don't owe this, then you can go to court and you can actually sort it out in court and the court can make a judgment. But in this case, they can't. And that, I think, is when you see that the route to justice is being denied, then you have to say, well, what else is going on in the infrastructure, in the administrative infrastructure? And I think very often it is, as with the Post Office, it's a question of, well, we're going to lose our brand. We're going to then have to pay out huge amounts of compensation. So what you do as an officer of that particular organization is you hunker down because you don't want to spoil your brand and you don't want to have to pay the compensation. And whenever government does that, that is the worst, because actually we are there to represent our constituents. We are there to say, what's your problem? Okay, why is it a problem? It's a problem because the legislation isn't right in this area. Let's change the legislation and make it right so these problems don't happen. But when Parliament is actually part of the blockage in the system, whether it's HMRC or the Home Office, and they're saying, well, actually, we don't have to pay on that compensation. We don't want to, you know, have it shown that we've done something wrong, and you build a wall around, that's when democracy starts breaking down. Mm. That's when really MPs need to stand up and say, this is just wrong.
And we saw that with things like Windrush and the infected blood scandal and loads of other things as well. Blanche, there was a debate in Parliament, wasn't there, last month on the loan charge stuff. There was a lot of criticism from MPs about HMRC and this idea that the HMRC have been wanting to prevent more investigation of this stuff and prevent more stuff. And it's sense that, again, and the government have been not willing to push HMRC into looking again at this, you know, barring a TV show, which unfortunately might be a bit dry if it's about tax issues, but unless the TV show, what else do you think will actually lead to a big change? You mentioned Rachel Reeves there, a Labour administration might look at it again, but do you think that there really will be a chance for more justice for people caught by the loan charge?
I hope so. There's so many layers of injustice, because it's not as though HMRC sent out invoices and said, you owe this. They sent out nudge letters, which honest people replied to immediately, not wanting to be on the wrong side of the law or HMRC. And they were immediately investigated, all of their years opened, still open. Some people have had their years open for over 10 years. Whereas people who ignored those nudge letters or didn't respond are completely off the hook. So it's not as though they've caught everybody. At one point, HMRC said that they had actually prosecuted 12 promoters. Freedom of Information showed, yes, they had, but they were nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the loan charge.
Right.
Not one promoter of the loan charge has been prosecuted. So what do I hope for? I hope that what 28 MPs agreed happens, that retrospective legislation is never accepted again, that new laws are properly scrutinised without being passed through with a handful of people who haven't got a clue what they're reading about, and this is properly reassessed, investigated, reviewed fairly. Every single taxpayer should have tax certainty, tax fairness, and know where they are, not a bill some 10 years later with interest that is completely out of the blue.
Mm. Yeah, Alice, then, unless you know, a producer is listening and wants to turn it into a TV show, the TOEIC stuff, what else that could happen would lead to more of a recourse for those students who were caught out by it and perhaps who are, you know, been deported and elsewhere? What else could happen that would turn the fortunes around of this situation?
Well, in the case of my clients, the answer is quite straightforward. They could just take a much more proactive and fair approach to settling those cases. I mean, it's really within their gift.
Right.
For those students who still haven't been exonerated, it's about fairness and decency. You know, a little bit of imagination. What if it was you on the receiving end of that kind of treatment?
I wondered if you thought the post office legislation that was announced this week, you know, the kind of automatic exoneration, is that something that you think that could
work? Yes, that would certainly help. Large numbers of students who are in an impossible position, having to fight sometimes from overseas, other times here, but without immigration status, so with no right to work, no ability to provide for themselves, of many of them in huge amounts of debt. So yes, certainly a group exoneration would make a big difference to those people.
And Barry, obviously, apart apart from, you know, Toby Jones playing you in the inevitable TV show, what else could happen? There's the leasehold bill coming through, which you derided at the start, but it's got its second reading in the Lords, I think, at the end of the month. Do you have any faith that peers might add in things? I think things like
I'm sure they will,
forfeiture and that sort of stuff.
I'm sure they will. Many of the amendments that we put down in committee, I'm sure the Lords will reintroduce, and I'm sure the government will reject them again, just as they did before, because they're digging their heels in. Mm. Now that's very sad, but what we now need is not a bill like this that slightly improves a few aspects of leasehold. We need wholesale reform of the system so that people can live securely in their own homes, be responsible for the maintenance of those homes, both individually in their apartments and collectively in their block, without other people using it as a means of extracting money from them.
That's all we've got time for this week, but you can read all the latest on the big stories from Westminster at politicshome.com and keep right up to date by subscribing to our 7-day week newsletters or click on the link on our homepage. Thanks again to my brilliant guests, Blanche Zaff, Nazik Ramadan, Alice Hardy and Barry Gardner. Thanks all for listening. Please subscribe wherever your podcast and leave us a review. If you want to get in touch, then reach out to us on Twitter at politicshome or email us via news@politicshome.com. But for now, I've been Alan Tolhurst and this has been The Rundown.